Welcome back to Inside Lacrosse, Pro Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Kyle Devitt, the senior analyst at Inside Lacrosse, and today I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Yes, Chris, PLL 2020 is over. Long live PLL 2020. The Whipsnakes are the 2020 PLL champions. What are your immediate thoughts as we record this the same day that the Whips took home their second consecutive championship trophy?
Well, first and foremost, congratulations to Jim Stagnita and the Whipsnakes, back-to-back champs, owners of both potential belts, both potential crowns. They did it again, stomped everybody on their way to an exciting finale. Things going to stick out to me for this one is had their backs against the wall. You know, I think that is one of those things that really establishes, you know, your team, gives them that true measure of a champion. You know, it's one thing if you're just outmatching everybody along the way, but the real question is how do you pick yourself up when you get knocked down? And I think that's another scenario we've seen the Whipsnakes conquer. Just kind of adds another element to their resume, and, you know, they delivered huge in this one.
And we will get to it, but we didn't do a podcast for the semifinals, so we're going to take a jump in the Wayback Machine and start it out with how we got here, and that is Chaos 13, Archers 9. Archers look terrible here, and it sounds mean to say that days after they were eliminated, but honestly, I don't feel bad about it. They spent most of the tournament playing with a joie de vivre, if you will, and they had none of it in this game. And the Chaos played with only joy in their hearts, it seemed. It was like a succubus effect. They just took all of the fun out of the Archers and used it themselves. I think they were just doing their job out there. And the Archers looked like they were doing a job and labored in every part of their game. You know, days before, they were effortless in their execution. But it's as if the Chaos found a certain weakness, and they did, and exploited it over and over and over. I need three more overs. Over and over and over. That's six goals. By the way, it's the same weakness they used to defeat the Chrome and try to use to beat the Whipsnakes in the final, and it worked for at least a half. And that weakness is attacking the weakest short stick defensive midfielder over and over and over and over and over to the point where they should have been benched, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you can do that six times, that's really on the Archers, because, you know, you should really only be able to do it, we'll say, two or three times before we look into some sort of plan B or plan C in the defensive strategies. But you know, they kept taking advantage of it, and, you know, if it's going to be there, they're going to keep operating in that same fashion. For the Archer side, I thought they looked jumpy. I thought they looked nervous. They didn't look as in control as we were used to seeing this kind of Archers offense, which I think kind of stands out in the league as one that is really, really sort of based on this well-rehearsed, settled offense with all sorts of, you know, it'd be like a topside pick with somebody sweeping across the middle. They have, it looks like they operate under a very, very structured system. Very smart play off ball. And what happened in this one is I think they just kind of got, you know, a little rattle, took a shot, kind of back on their heels for much of this one, and it really threw off what they do best. They weren't able to settle in and play smart, controlled ball. You know, I think what happens is when you see this team that's been putting up seven goals, eight goals every game, you know, they lost all four to start the tournament, and then all of a sudden they drop 19 goals on the Chrome, I think you get caught a little off guard. You know, you don't have that much film on that particular version of the Chaos team. You know, you have all this from last season and from the games that we can just say didn't count, is I think what we can in hindsight say about them. You've got all that footage, but you have to throw it all away when they come out in a completely different offense, different personnel, a different squad, essentially. And it didn't seem like they could really play their game while also focusing on how to react to the stuff that the new Chaos were doing. One example that stood out to me very early in the fourth quarter, still a very close game, Archers came down and tossed up a sort of a hurried two-pointer with like 11 seconds left on the shot clock, and Blaze Reardon wins the runout. And it's that kind of play where, you know, we're not used to seeing from this kind of surgical Archers offense. But it is what happens when you get popped in the mouth early and you keep trying to claw your way back. You go for a few home runs here and there, and sometimes they do not work out in your favor.
Yeah, you can't just go back into the bag and throw a haymaker and expect it to land if all you've been doing is jabbing and body shots the entire tournament. And I think you're right. They just got caught unawares. And the Chaos team, listen, I don't want to take anything away from this Chaos team. I don't particularly enjoy all of the like faux bluster. And Chris and I were talking before the podcast. We were like, I think we really like most of the Chaos players. I don't think I love like what they were putting out in terms of like the social media message of like, you counted us out, we're underdog, we're coming to get you. Like, shut up. Just play, dude. Like, I know that that's not real. I know it's not real. And like, the players aren't really like that. All those players are actually like, they might be the classiest team like out there. They have a lot of like really dedicated professionals. And I want to give them a ton of credit. And I know we just talked about the Archers a bunch and how they, like, quote unquote, gave up the game. I don't think they gave it up. I think they got beat fair and square by a Chaos team that totally manipulated their situation and something that foreshadowed what they would do in the championship game. Let's move on to the other semifinal. Whipsnakes 13, Redwoods 12 in overtime. My heart actually breaks for the Redwoods. But also, I'm going to read a text I got from someone in lacrosse after the overtime result and single out no one in particular. And I quote, "For the record, one of my guys goes air gate in OT and misses. We fight," unquote. And I have to say, I don't blame him for having that opinion. One of the things that needs to happen for pro lacrosse to get to the next level is they have to have more critical accountability. 70% of these players are coaches, and of that 70%, 30% of them play like coaches. The rest are just, shall we say, not as sound with their actions. We shall. But this game had a lot more going on than just the ending. What were your thoughts on the contest?
Yeah, so just to kind of play off of that for a second, it is kind of how sports are generally defined. You know, if somebody does something that doesn't work out, that's kind of how the game is known. Or, you know, one bad incident or one bad play, it just kind of spreads its sort of stench throughout history, right? You know, like, we shouldn't know who Steve Bartman is, but we know what kind of outfit he was wearing when he was sitting in the crowd, you know, because he was near a foul ball. But everybody's just going to say, oh, it's the Steve Bartman game. Or, you know, for example, I'm going to say a Red Sox. And, you know, the Red Sox have had enough success. I think I can toss the name out here. Bill Buckner. Yeah. Now, that was an error, but a billion things happened in other sides of the play. But one bad thing, and that's just kind of the level of it. So, unfortunately, for Brent Adams, I think that's just kind of the load you have to carry when you go for that sort of thing. You know, if it works out, it's amazing. But if it doesn't, then that's kind of how this one's going to be etched in history, I think. As far as he goes, he had done, I thought, a tremendous job in the previous game against the Water Dogs. You know, dropping down to attack, he had a hat trick, really offered up a new look that I don't think they were prepared for. And, you know, he brings a great deal of speed and quickness and intelligent ball play that we hadn't seen down in the attack role from Adams leading into that. And yeah, if that shot goes in against the Whipsnakes, against the defending champ Whipsnakes, he is a legend until the end of time. But in that situation against them, I didn't think it was the right time. And even if he made it, I still feel like I'd be pretty comfortable saying I don't think that was the right time for that. It reminded me of an episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where, I'm take you back a minute here.
Oh, my God.
Will had recently transferred to Bel-Air Prep and was a basketball star. And Carlton wasn't quite pleased with all the attention he was receiving. So final shot of the game, for the big game winner. He ends up stealing the ball and going for a half-court heave. That does not work out well because Carlson's not good at basketball. Now, it was, you know, not quite the move. Sometimes you do that, sometimes you don't. And I think this was not the move for that situation. That said, there's plenty more in this game. It wasn't just that one play, of course. Personally, when the Redwoods were down 8-2 in the second quarter, I thought it felt over. Obviously, big comebacks, big scoring swings all the time in pro lacrosse. But just atmospherically, it really felt like a beating. You know, you've got Joe Nardella. How are they going to string together a run? But somehow they did it, and they did it by winning faceoffs, which I thought was, you know, sort of a really dramatic element. You know, like, hey, if this team is firing on all cylinders and they're stringing together faceoff wins against the best faceoff unit in the league, you know, they've got something here. They fought all the way back, and, you know, they're just tremendous. You know, few errors, few questionable decisions here or there kind of cursed this thing ultimately. Personally, my big takeaways, I thought Tim Trautner played out of his mind, and he really kept the door open for the team to mount that comeback. I mean, he had a save in the final minute of regulation. You know, we're not talking anything in overtime if Trautner doesn't come up huge prior to that. And also, I think I'm going to remember from this game, we got to see the real Matt Kavanaugh for the first time this whole series. You know, I mean, he was super dominant attackman. But we had seen him very limited roles, was out with a back injury of some sort. He came back in this one, had 4 goals and an assist. He was, you know, aggressive rides, forcing turnovers, just all over the place. And it was good to see him back, the Matt Kavanaugh we're used to seeing, you know, all these years and going all the way back to Notre Dame, where you know, when the game's on the line, these big stage situations, he's going to just give it all he's got and just, you know, like a pit bull on pre-workout or something. And this is the first time this series we really got to see that.
I'm still surprised we didn't get to see the all lefty attack of Walters, Kavanaugh, and Garnsey. I don't like, we've all played lacrosse. Everyone has played with a entire line of righties. Yeah. What's the difference if they're all lefties? Like, I mean, listen, I know Kavanaugh and Garnsey are basically the same player. Not like in the way that they think about the game and what they like produce necessarily, but the spots that they want to go to are the same. So it's hard to play them together. You saw that the Redwoods, like, you know, they floated Kavanaugh to the middle, or they pushed him to the high wing and kind of let Garnsey have that backside slot and play X a little bit more. I mean, obviously, I don't want to like keep bringing this up because I think we brought it up on every podcast, but, you know, the absence of Jules Henningberg here, pretty apparent, you know. And I think they were trying to jam Clark Peterson into a role that didn't work to the offense that they were running to spread things out, because he kind of like hangs out on the crease. And if you got a guy that hangs out on the crease, guess what? You got a defender that hangs out on the crease.
Right.
And he's just going to slide. And if you're trying to set up sweeps and runs down the alley, you're setting up a slide. You're setting up a double to pass out of. So I get it. I get why they did what they did. But, man, it's got to be heartbreaking. And it's probably not helping that we keep bringing it up. So let's move on to the championship recap. Whipsnakes 12, Chaos 6. Now, if you're listening to this, you probably saw this game. And if you didn't, you should go back and watch your DVR recording of the game. And if you don't have it, you should go get NBC Gold. Before I start, I want to read this tweet before it gets screenshotted and hung in the Louvre. That's how beautiful it is. Excuse me. To all the haters, sorry the refs did a bad job. Sorry I went 72%. Sorry I worked harder than everyone to prepare. You guys fuel my fire, and I love pissing you off. See you in 2021. The word. You know who you are. Sorry for winning. Ha, not really. At PLL Whipsnakes. That tweet was from the one and only Joe Nardella. Now, sometimes I see players tweet stuff like this, and my first instinct, and this is probably not great for me, but I go, wait, did I say that? Is he mad at me? And in this case, I can safely say, absolutely not. I said he was the MVP on literally every platform I had been on for the last week and a half. So if you are that person he's talking about, RIP, you just got put in the ground, dude. Like, so yeah. I feel bad for you. In terms of the actual game, though, Chris, give me your initial thoughts on what we all saw in the first half versus what we all experienced in the second half, and particularly the fourth quarter.
All right, let me say this about that tweet, first of all. To all the haters, I wonder how many haters he's talking about there.
Dude, face-off guys are weird. They pretend to like each other. They actually hate each other. It's really funny. Like, the right. inside world of, like, face-off guys is probably, like, have you ever seen King of Kong?
Yes.
Like, dudes that just play, like, you know, old-school arcade. Those are face-off guys. That's what it's like. I'm convinced that's what they're like.
Right, yeah. He says all the haters, but I think he knows the exact number of haters to which that tweet is directed. I don't think there's an army of Joe Nardella haters roaming the internet. I think there are some people, and he knows who they are, and they know that he knows. And I love it. Good for him. Celebrating that win. The game itself. So, Whitesnakes looked dominant to start, I thought. They jumped out to the 2-goal lead. They were knocking down a bunch of shots in the first quarter before they even got to Kyle Burnlohr. And the ones that did, you know, he was taking care of them. It really looked like they were going to step in and shut down all of this chaos noise they'd been hearing for the past few days. You know, the big turnaround, the big slow play, the big revamped offense, all of that stuff. They were like, it doesn't matter because we are the Whipsnakes and we don't care. Shut up. And then they just stopped scoring like forever. It stopped scoring for like 30 minutes or something wild like that. And basically we had the chaos sort of launching their fast breaks, catching the Whipsnakes off guard, the two-man game that, like, so the things that the Whipsnakes knew, the things that all of us knew they had to worry about, they all started paying off for the chaos regardless, right? Because even if you know they're coming, a lot of those things you really can't stop if they're working on all cylinders. Like, I could tell you, hey, here comes Austin Stotts. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. He's just going to work his way through, right? Like, that's my scouting report. You know, some people are scouting report proof, right? You know, Dane Smith might turn a corner on you. He might overpower you. Good luck. They just looked like they had been totally stunned by all of these things. It was a serious counterpunch. You know, the chaos took all of that Whipsnake effort in the first and just redirected it and started answering with their own style, and it was working. I thought the Whipsnakes got thrown off. They started throwing up some shots that weren't opportune. Their dodges weren't meaningful anymore. They're killing a lot of the clock on dodges that didn't seem to have intention, you know, just going through the motions on that sort of thing. Zed Williams and Matt Rambo, totally silent. It looked like it was just Brad Smith and Jay Carlson having to do all the heavy lifting early on, you know. But I think this is why they're the best team in the league. They found a way to stay close, to keep it competitive, to stay afloat until the superstars stepped up and took over, right? You know, they had enough depth on that team, and they have enough focus on the little things, like, you know, winning runouts, cleaning up rebounds, you know, minimizing second chances for the chaos. And I think that's really what separates them from a lot of other teams. You have to kind of work on paying attention to those little things for a while. And so once they took care of all of that, then it was Zed time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm going to remember about this game is not the goals from Zed, actually. I'm going to remember the chaos players passing the ball every time Matt Dunn came near them. Passing the ball every time Bryce Young went out to play the ball. And only attacking shorties. Like, they went at the shorties. And I thought Tyler Warner played the best out of all three of them. I think they could have had, if all three of those guys pushed every time they had a chance, I feel like the Whips would have been back in it sooner. But again, I don't want to take away from the things, the little, you were talking about little things the Whipsnakes did. The little things the Chaos did to frustrate them were very apparent. And one of the things that they actually ran an aggressive drop ride that made the Whipsnakes like pull a defensive midi back to the middle of the field on every clear. Like that alone eats up, you know, 8 seconds. And there were possessions where the Whipsnakes were caught without any of, without their personnel fully on the field. And there was only 28 seconds left on the clock, on the shot clock. Like that's a real strategy that almost paid off. They just couldn't get stopped, man. Once the Whipsnakes, you know, went to an invert set, once they started driving and breaking GLE, once they like got a little confidence, it was over. You know, and Zed was the beneficiary of all of that. I think he's at his best when he's put in a position to kind of dodge one guy. You know, like he's not like Rambo. He's not like other players where he can dodge seven people. Like he's not even like Josh Byrne where he can dodge like three guys. Josh Byrne scored out of a triple in this game. Like, come on, silly. And everyone knew he's on that like trick shot stuff, and he still managed to do it. So I mean, and he had a great tournament as well. And again, I don't want to take things away from the Chaos, and this will be a very painful loss for them. But I think the Whips obviously deserve to win, man. Like you can't argue against that. And it's not just because of the fourth quarter. It's exactly the reason you said they stayed in it. They stayed ready. They didn't like wait for it to come. They stayed and it came because they persevered. And that's the thing that's super impressive to me. And that I think that comes from, you know, a combination of the preparedness of the defense, that whole defensive unit. It comes from Staggs, and it comes from, you know, Matt Rambo probably in the huddle making a fart joke. Like that's all, that's what you need. Like you need like a dude that is like, all right, man, let's just go score. You know, like you need that like McConaughey-ness somewhere to like kind of even everything out because it's dire otherwise. And I can't stress enough how important that must be. You know, like Rambo clearly supports his teammates so much. It's like a thing that I don't think we in the lacrosse media paid enough attention to when he was at Maryland, because Maryland was kind of like a machine and he was, you know, the biggest cog in that machine. And now at the pro level, like the great thing about the pro level guys and like I got and everyone else, I got to tell you, like the greatest thing that I've gotten to experience as someone that has covered pro lacrosse for over a decade is guys become great their own way. They don't, if they play in, you know, a college where they only, or a system where they're only the dodger, you know, they get to the pros and they're like, well, I dodged for like a long time. Can I like do something else? And they're like, sure, you can catch this feed and redirect it to X and also like step into finishes on the low block. That's actually right. A very specific player I'm talking about. You can guess in the comments. but you're looking at what a player can become, that you're watching potential unfold in front of you in a way that you will never see in college. And all the people that are like, oh, college is so much better, college is so much better, like I get why you think that, and I get where you're coming from with that. And being a college fan is very special, and I don't want to take anything away from it. But this is different. It's different in a fun way where guys succeed and guys fail. And you can pick your team. You can pick your player. You can pick anything. It's awesome. Like, if I learned anything – or if you guys learn anything listening to us, it's that kind of process is what makes lacrosse fans for life. And I feel like this tournament in particular made lacrosse fans for life. And I'm super, super thankful for it. Chris, what are your kind of thoughts on the bubble force field and its success?
So here's what I think. You know, obviously, it went well, which was ideal and preferred, and we didn't hear any sort of horror stories or hear any sort of nightmare situations play out. And all of that was great. The last thing we needed was for this summer of professional lacrosse to end on a bad note, have the wheels come out of the whole thing. So it was great that, you know, it's done and there's no more chance for anything bad to go on. Before it started, I was just thinking, like, you know, it's good that it isn't that long. It's good that it can just be a self-contained little thing and try to minimize the risk and just get out. So I'm thrilled with how it was done, and really sounds like, you know, they had everything taken care of to a very, very satisfactory degree. Now, if you're in the bubble, the force field or whatever, and everyone's on board, it works, right? You know, a virus or a pandemic is certainly a complex situation, but in and of itself, it's not that complicated, right? If you can do it, if you can just huddle around and everybody's fine, you know, it's not going to spontaneously manifest itself, right? So you just need participation, you need isolation, and hopefully everything's great. So they take it seriously, minimize the risk, and it pays off. You know, they keep everybody on the campus, and can't stress this enough, get everybody to commit, and that's that. You know, that's all you really have to worry about. And I'm thrilled that it's worked, and it appears to be working very well for the NBA and WNBA, who are currently in their respective bubbles with even longer seasons. And, you know, the last thing we need to hear is some sort of nightmares about these things playing out in terrible ways. But again, it's not that complicated if you have the means and the dedication, right? You just don't get caught slipping, get everybody on board, make sure nobody's operating under the feeling of invincibility or anything like that. Make sure people are aware of the risks at place. You know, like, one person can't say, I am different, I am special, I'm going to go out for a little while, and then I'll come back, and I'm sure it'll be okay. Because, you know, one person can screw absolutely everything up. So you get these people on board, let them know exactly what's at stake here. You can't afford to slip up. And they did it, and I thought it went really well.
I think it's incredible they pulled it off without one player or staff member testing positive for COVID. I can't give enough credit. I can't. The MLL failed so completely in their efforts that two entire teams legitimately left because of just a malpractice. And it was spun as like forfeits, which made it like so much more gross. And also, like, I can't wait to tell everyone what happened MLL Championship weekend and why I skipped covering it. But that's what the off season is for, and not what this podcast is about, because it's about the other league. And this other league, the PLL, I think they leveled up here, man. I mean, not everything worked, but listen, most of it did. And the most paramount thing being that they created a safe and successful sports tournament during a pandemic that became more resurgent right before they started. That's the thing. Like, I feel like if you're looking at this through another lens, like, they could have canceled it. Like, Utah had a raise in cases, like, right before they started. It could have easily not gone down. And I think, like, you have to, I'm so grateful for it. Like, I don't want to, like, sit here and be like, I'm not trying to, like, say they're lucky or anything. I don't think it was luck. I think they did their due diligence, and we, in return, were gifted this great example of what pro lacrosse can be in most of the games. So let's talk about kind of what comes next. Like, what do we want to see? Chris, what do you want to see out of the Premier Lacrosse League?
So as far as the future goes for the PLL, here's what I want to see. I want more transparency, because whether or not these guys like it or not, that's kind of got to be the future. If you're making this transition from wherever you think professional lacrosse has been to wherever you think professional lacrosse can go, these players are going to be stars, you know, and that's, there's going to be a bit of a trade-off there. I think it's rare to gain additional levels of fame or notoriety or, you know, success, you know, for some of these guys who run clinics or, you know, make money off of their names. It's rare to gain that kind of level up, without sacrificing a bit of privacy, you know? So I'm just saying, if you want lacrosse to be a major sport, I think they'd have to get ready to be treated more like major sport athletes. And what I mean by that ties into something that I've been looking forward to since everything started falling apart back in the spring, and that is this upcoming draft class and the next sort of year, you know, like 2021 pro scene, right? This class might be huge. We don't know how huge yet. Depends on who stays and who goes. But it might be like double huge. And it's, even if it's not, it's still insanely talented. And right now, there's nowhere for all those guys to go.
Yeah.
Just logistically speaking, they don't need any of them. They got to make room or something. So what's going to happen? You know, are we looking at more expansion? And can the league afford to add more teams? Honestly, can it afford to not add more teams if you have all these people who want to play for it and you don't want them to all get away? Because there are a lot of big name guys. That's another thing that happens as lacrosse keeps getting bigger. These names are going to keep getting bigger, and we've got stars coming out here. And now, it being the end of the second year, and I don't know if there's going to be some kind of, you know, word player adjustment of the contracts based on this being an abbreviated season, but a lot of guys with two-year deals, we're going to be approaching the end of those deals now. You know, these guys who started off with the league are kind of, you know, co-founders in a sense, based on, you know, what we've heard about the PLL structure. You know, when it all started off, they were big into discussing, you know, equity, these players having interest in it. But some of these guys, is their time up? I don't know. Real pro sports are far more cutthroat in the whole "what have you done for me lately" than pro lacrosse has been throughout its history. You know, it's a lot more about, you know, a relationship you have with someone, or, you know, if you work together in another aspect, maybe we'll keep you around, or maybe we'll put you in this city, or maybe we can give you something to do. You know, there's all sorts of alternate considerations that have been made in the past. But as this sport becomes more like the big, big, big sports, I think some of that stuff kind of gets pushed to the wayside. I think some of these individuals are going to be less treated like individuals. So I think there's a lot in the air that's going to have to be sorted out this off season. And all of these intrigued fans that we're getting more and more around are going to want to gain some more insight. You know, like, oh, is this player coming back? How long is this guy signed for? Is this contract going to be renewed? Is he going to get traded? Moves on top of moves. The more fans you have, the nosier they get, the more they want this kind of information. Give us all the information. That's what I'm looking forward to.
And the noisier they get as well. True. Which I think we're only seeing a little tip of that. And we're just, you know, PLL cares so much about social. But what happens if the social turns? You know, that's definitely something that can happen at any moment. I'm going to take a turn here, and this is just going to sound like me throwing a million darts at your face for a second. Just like, try to relax. So I really want to see well-crafted off-season content of all the players dealing with their current situations in life. I want an entire documentary of guys going back home and kind of readjusting. I want another tournament in 3 to 4 months. Hold it wherever it's safe. I want game shows where PLL hopefuls compete for a chance to try out for a roster spot. I want more roster spots. I want an eighth team. I want more real sports coverage, not WWE style stuff. Toe the line, make a real sports talk. Maybe some NFL film sort of production. Hire JJ Albert this time. He did one in 2005 for the MLL that no one has seen, but people will go see yours, so maybe hire him. Sell the product by selling the players and lock down those team identities. I want to see coaching breakdowns of games. Show us all what a film session looks like from start to finish. Why am I giving out all these ideas? Because I love this. Like, I live for this. I've lived humbly to keep covering this, and I see this like teeny tiny light that I don't think I ever thought I'd see at the end of the tunnel. And I tweeted something really cryptic after the game ended. And it was that this is not the ending. This is the beginning, because that's how I see it. It is the beginning. This is the beginning of legitimizing pro lacrosse. Like, I'm sure like everyone's like, well, it was the betting. I'm like, betting got more people interested, but the actual product is what's going to get people to buy in. And I believe that. And if you're listening to this, you should believe it too. We're going to go into our recommendation of the week and try to bring this thing in for a really like sweaty and convoluted ending. What do you say? Chris, give me your recommendation of the week.
Sounds good. First, I have a recommendation for the Chaos. Chaos, if you're listening to this, I know you're going to do a lot of off-season stuff, bulletin board material, internalizing, making your enemies list. Here's my recommendation. Let us love you.
Yeah, don't do that. Just people hate that.
Yeah, just bring it in for a hug, man. People like the Chaos.
Yeah.
They don't hate you guys.
You're great.
Yeah. Just let us in sometimes. Okay, my personal recommendation, nostalgia. Now, what I mean by that is this. Kyle, in these difficult and uncertain times, many of us have taken comfort to finding comfort in nostalgia, clinging to old, comfortable things like a life raft, and, you know, as one would do with a baby blanket or a stuffed bear, you know, there's that sense of safety that comes with the familiarity, happiness, longing for a time long, long ago when a kid could be a kid. That's the slogan from Toys R Us. And people don't even have that anymore because the present is sad and the past was wonderful and it made us feel great. So what do you do about that? Here's what I recommend. Two things. First, food-based nostalgia. I want you to think about something you used to eat long ago and can still eat. You know, if there's a dietary restriction, throw that out. But if it was something you used to enjoy and they make it, go out and buy it and eat it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a box of chocolate eclair ice cream. I have not had that since I was probably about 10 years old. I stopped for no reason. And now I kind of wish I had one. So I'm going to go out and get some of those. And I will let you know if I still think they are good or if they're actually trash. Second, I'm going to listen to some old music that I used to listen to when I was younger. And that is my 2B portion of this recommendation. Musical nostalgia. For me, the song that I personally am going to play probably when this ends, Ain't No Fun by Snoop Dogg, Nate Dogg, Warren G, and Corrupt. I'm not going to lie to you. It is an awful song with no redeeming value whatsoever. It is just stewing in all sorts of terrible language and misogyny, and it will make you a little bit of a worse person for enjoying the song. But sometimes you just got to kick back, relax, and get a little ignorant for 5 minutes. And for me, Ain't No Fun is going to be that vehicle to reach that location. If you are a kid, don't listen to it. It's bad. But anybody else, that's my song. Find your own or pick that one up.
I have my own here, but I'm going to kind of backpedal and not try to one-up you here. I'm just going to match it. Weird ice cream that I like that I haven't had. I had it in college because I don't even know if they make this anymore. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to mess with your mind. Ice cream sandwich ice cream. It's ice cream with chopped up bits of ice cream sandwiches in the ice cream.
That's brilliant.
Is that the weirdest thing? I like listen to you talk about the chocolate eclair thing. I'm like, first of all, I don't know what that is. Second of all, that reminds me of this weird ice cream that I really like and I haven't seen forever. I think Edie's made it or whatever, but that would be that. And then I think for my song, I don't have a song, but I was, as I usually do, falling into YouTube holes. And I fell into a Transformers one. And I don't mean the terrible Michael Bay movies.
No.
I mean the one that matters from 1986. Transformers. The movie.
The movie.
I'm going to watch. You know what? I'm going to watch it after we record this. And I might even live tweet it. That's how I feel about it. And people are going to be like, what is this? Didn't the PLL thing just end? What's he doing? Now you know. But my own personal recommendation of the week, I'm speaking to you, listener, at this point. Just you. I don't know how to tell you this. but you need to get a haircut if you can. You're looking rough. I hadn't gotten one for over 5 months, and I legitimately looked like a lost eighth grader for most of that time. So I masked up, got a temperature check, got it cut today, and I feel like a new person. I can look in the mirror with far less shame than usual. It's great. And also I regret ending the podcast on this note. So one more quick thought, Chris, what will you miss most about the last 3 weeks?
I'm going to miss appointment television, like among the lacrosse community, you know, the knowing ahead of time, everybody's going to be somewhere at, you know, 10 o'clock, or everybody's going to be somewhere at 8:30 or whatever. And I'm just going to miss watching it with lacrosse Twitter. So for example, I don't really remember much of anything about the World Games finals in Netanya. I know that I watched them. I know where I was. I remember the last, you know, two plays, like the controversial stuff. And I remember who I was Twitter watching it with. And I feel that a couple years from now, I will remember Zed Williams going out of his mind, and I will remember Twitter watching the PLL championship game, and that's probably going to be about all I remember from this one too. I kind of glom onto the big, you know, external experiences more than the internal sort of plays and stuff like that. So, for me personally, other than getting groceries by, like, you know, online ordering and picking them up curbside, I haven't really left my house for several months. Going back to what you just said, I have not had a haircut since this whole thing began, probably since March or something like that. It's significant. But, you know, just been staying in, just sitting here and trying to watch lacrosse and write stuff and be healthy. And that's pretty much all I've been doing. But it has been great, like I said, to know a certain time and date where I was going to meet up with everybody. You know, I don't even know where they live or what most of them look like or whatever, but none of that stuff matters. If you just are willing to join in, hop in on Twitter, watch some lacrosse and get some jokes off, don't take things too seriously. Have a good time. And I think we were very successful in that regard. Not just specifically us. I just mean everyone in Lex Twitter who was there with good intentions. So that's what I'm going to miss the most.
Yeah, everyone else, you can go to hell. We don't need you.
Amen.
Seriously, you're terrible. And you're not funny either. It's actually embarrassing how not funny you are. I do want to clarify the haircut point. I'm in New Hampshire, which is a bottom four state, and we're mostly open. But wear your mask. As for things I'll miss, I'll miss doing this with you, man. I really will. Like, I'll miss interacting, just like you said, with all the pro lacrosse fans, old and new. There's a lot of chatter about how, well, this is how I want pro lacrosse, all compressed into 2-3 weeks so we can all go do recruiting stuff and have a summer and a break after the spring season. And I hate that way of thinking. But maybe 3 months is too much, especially now. But I want more than 3 weeks. I think once we find that sweet spot, which I think is probably more like 1.5 to 2 months of intense competition, maybe with like an intermission in there.
Yeah.
And also when there's only one league left, we're going to see where things are actually going to go. And I don't just hope this. I actually think that it's upwards and forward because I have no other choice. That's it. Thank you for listening to the Inside Lacrosse Pro Lacrosse Podcast PLL Edition 2020. Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ChrisRosie22 and on Instagram at Chris Rosenthal.
And you can find me at TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you're subscribed to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast feed. Please review, download, tell a friend, spread the word. Thanks for listening. We'll see you sometime.